Welcome back to another Action Factory podcast, and you join us as we enter the final third of my free course, NLP in Residential Youth Work. As always, I invite you to return to part one and follow along for the full course. I designed the course to be effective and usable, commuter-sized pieces. I want you to be able to listen on the bus, metaphorically speaking, of course, and practice at work. If we haven't met before, my name's Michael Dawson, and I developed a universal framework for residential youth workers called the Solutions Toolkit. It takes the most powerful change strategies ever developed, and NLP is obviously one of them, helps you to adopt or adapt them into your unique line of work. And when I say your line of work, I mostly mean residential youth work and occasionally mean youth work in general. Of course, NLP strategies play a role in the framework I developed for you. And as a regular listeners know, I hold no allegiance to any particular working model, and I suggest you don't either. I've been in and around this business long enough to know that, number one, you are the expert in the room. Number two, most models will not copy and paste into your work. So that's why I developed the Solutions Toolkit. That's me. The Solutions Toolkit does have a team training version, and it can be accessed free by heading to www.theactionfactory.com. So there you go. That might have sounded like a word from our sponsors, but I really don't want you to be under any illusions that I have a loyalty towards NLP. It's simply one of the many tools I specialize in. In the meantime, let's push on with the 10-part training course that you probably tuned in for. Now, I'm recording this episode in November of 2023, but I still feel it's appropriate to wish you a very happy new year, as this recording won't be broadcast till January 2024. Who knows, you might even be listening to this in November 2024. One final quick message is this. We've got 16,000 downloads and virtually no subscribers. A subscription is a way of whispering to the internet that you like and want more of what I'm doing here. In today's session, I want to talk about peer pressure in groups, particularly the young people you care for, but not excluding, you know, your colleagues and associates. The same rules apply. If you have any experience in residential youth work whatsoever, or any kind of youth work for that matter, you will have watched peer pressure at play. Not only have you watched it, you have experienced it all your life, at least as soon as you added a developed reasonable understanding of the world. It was motivational speaker Jim Rohn who said, "You're the average of the five people you spend the most time with." Do you want me to say that again? Think about that. You're the average of the five people you spend most of your time with. In fact, the science has gone way further than that. We now believe that your friends, whom you have never met, can influence your life. And in the book Connected by James Fowler and Nicholas Christakis, the pair offer really compelling arguments that social networks influence our ideas, our emotions, health, relationships, behavior, politics, and pretty much everything. And that's a crazy idea because we all think that we are individuals who make our own decisions and decide how we feel. So peer pressure and influence is actually a much bigger part of our lives than we think. After all, who hasn't heard their parents talk about how they've been hanging around with a bad lot when they get caught up an apple tree, which is kind of thing that would happen to me? My mother never considered that I might be part of the bad lot, or even the leader of the bad lot. But I promise you, I wasn't. It was not my idea to go up the apple tree. Had she read the book I just referred to, I could have blamed not just my friends, but my friend's brother. Solomon Ash decided he wanted to test my mother's theory. He developed a study called A Minority of One Against a Unanimous Majority, to investigate how people behave in group settings when faced with a unanimous opposition to their own particular viewpoint. Now, I don't want to lead you on there. He never met my mother, but it was actually the same thing. So in the experiment, participants placed in groups where everyone else in the group would conform to the same opinion, even though these opinions were deliberately and obviously incorrect. For example, a series of lines on a page. The participants were then asked which line was the longest, and even though it might clearly be line B, all the stooges were told to suggest it was A, which was clearly and obviously wrong. But the real participant in this study was then asked to express their opinion. The key finding was that a significant number of participants conformed to the unanimous, albeit incorrect, opinion of the group. Given the peer pressure, we are very likely to conform. Now, it gets even more interesting when Ash introduced a minority participant who would vehemently go against the group opinion, entirely turning the theory on its head. So what happened next? This minority participant consistently expressed their unique viewpoint, even when faced with strong opposition from the unanimous majority, who were in fact correct. And surprisingly, their persistence often led to other participants re-evaluating the stance they'd take. So this study demonstrated that when people find themselves in groups where everyone else agrees on something, they often go along with the group, even if they privately disagree. However, the presence of one person who steadfastly maintains a dissenting opinion can encourage others to think independently and potentially challenge the group's consensus. And this study highlights the power of both conformity and the influence of individuals in shaping group behaviour and decisions. Now, this is something worth noting when you are next in a team meeting. And bear in mind, there's many more interesting dynamics at work in that situation, but we'll save those for another day. But the study highlights the social pressure to conform with a group, and it suggests that people may abandon their own beliefs or judgments when they perceive a unanimous agreement among others. This conformity could be quite strong, making it challenging for someone to express a different viewpoint. We all naturally know this. On the other side, the study underscored the importance of independent thinking and a potential for one person to stand up for what they believe, even when surrounded by opposing views. And it shows that you can, with those convictions, be influential and help a group arrive at better decisions. What does all this mean for you, for your managers, for your team, and mainly, what does it mean for your young people? Peer pressure is ever present. It's a force in a residential setting. Peer pressure can manifest itself in various ways. Now, this is not a place for labelling or psychological diagnosis. In fact, it never is. There are a lot of reasons that peer pressure is so powerful. Most of them, I think, fairly kind of obvious. I mean, think of ourselves, think of our own kind of peer pressure. There's social acceptance, what people think of us. This is very important for all of us. There's behavioural influence, what you see around you as accepted standards of behaviour. Identity formation, asking yourself, who am I? What are my moral and behavioural standards? Conflicts such as taking sides, developing loyalties. Then there's positive peer pressure. You know, while peer pressure is often associated with negative behaviour, such as going into the neighbour's apple tree, it can also be a force for positive change. Now, some people may succumb to negative influences more readily, while others may resist and become leaders within the group. And as my mother suggested when I did wrong, I was easily led. And when I did right, then she didn't suggest much, to be honest. So is there any way in which we can use this knowledge to our advantage and perhaps help our easily led people, he says in quotation marks. Here's some thoughts of mine, and I would welcome yours. And this is with a tilt towards what we might call a children's home environment, a residential setting. One is setting rules and expectations. In a children's home, involving the young people in the setting of rules and expectations, okay, it's an old meme and cliche, but holding a group meeting with children could suggest that they have some input into the rules, such as promoting safety and harmony, encouraging them to take ownership of the rules and understand the reasons behind them. Once that's happened, then you can see as a group, they will actually produce positive peer pressure on those who go outside of those set of rules that they've agreed for themselves. Another one is creating a supportive environment. Okay, so peer support, mentorship among children, older or more experienced residents can help newcomers adjust to the environment and be given authority when onboarding new residents to mentor them and look after them because they're more mature and they've been around longer. And encouraging staff members to kind of foster that. I think that's a wonderful thing, personally, that me as a young person going into care would have much, much more immediately trusted another young person when I landed in this alien environment. Number three is maybe positive reinforcement. Implementing a system of positive reinforcement for good behaviour in the home. Praise and reward for children, following rules, completing chores, demonstrating pro-social behaviour and constantly giving positive feedback. Now, I used to teach parenting many years ago, and one of the things I realised we aren't very good at as adults, especially with young people, is finding positives, complimenting and noticing when kids simply do nothing or did what was expected of them. You know, so you take a young person, a child around a shop, and he doesn't scream and shout, and he doesn't have a tantrum, and he doesn't do this. We just don't notice because we want that and expect that. So we don't say, oh, it's been great. It's been such a pleasure being with you today. I've really enjoyed it. Let's get a little sweetie or grab a little treat. You know, it doesn't have to be huge. Let's grab a little treat until you've been so good. So we're not very good at any of that kind of thing as parents are constantly looking, searching out positives. Another one is shaping positive identities, encouraging young people to focus on their strengths and talents, provide opportunities for them to explore interests, whether they are good at art or sport or academic pursuits, creating that kind of environment where they have positive identities. Building a sense of belonging. How lucky is a young person that they landed in your residential establishment? That's a question I'm asking you and all of us. How lucky are you to have landed here with us? If we don't know the answer, then maybe we could think of what and have one ready for us, you know, in our back pocket. It's great that you came here. You know, you're going to fit in really, really well. You'll get on with so-and-so. He loves so-and-so. You know, you're part of us now, you're part of here, and inclusion, it's very, very reassuring for new arrivals to integrate smoothly now that you've got a buddy or a mentor or whatever. And then there's finally the staff approach, training staff members, people like you and people like me in positive behaviour modelling and effective communication. Part of it's in this course, part of it's in the Solutions Toolkit course. You know, the staff being mentors, role models, demonstrating behaviour and attitudes. And that isn't really me saying, you know, the kids should look up to you and want to be a care worker. It's looking up to you as your morals because they see how, I know this from experience, they see how you talk about other staff, about other people and about other young people. And they know subliminally, that's me next. Let's ask ourselves, you know, what's the takeaway here? How could NLP be effective in peer pressure scenarios? And how can you use what we talked about at a very basic level? Let's just quickly throw some ideas around in three different scenarios. Okay, so first of all, there's the what I would call mediating peer pressure. We often see this completely live. Two residents are pressuring another resident to engage in risky behaviour due to peer influence, and you may be observing from a distance, or you might be witnessing this whole thing. Our job is to mediate the situation, empower and target residents to resist peer pressure. We know this is possible from the ASH study. So NLP would ask you to look into kind of anchoring positive states, empowering that young person. Now, this sounds great, but in practice, we may have to be a bit cleverer than this. With the knowledge we have already about that kind of minority voice, we know it's possible to resist and even change the minds of the group. So here's where questioning techniques come in. You'll remember from earlier on in this course the power of asking a client to explain their action. If we have to explain our own logic, we often find it easier to see holes in the argument when you've got to say the words out loud. I'm sorry, but I will refer it to a central concept in my Solutions Toolkit framework. Being curious. Telling someone smoking is bad for them is often less effective. They already know that. Being curious about how this will kind of fit into their world might shift the idea. Because our victim doesn't currently smoke, why is he wishing to start or consider it? What will be good? What will be bad? In his world, there are clearly good things about smoking. So we have to be clever and a lot more subtle, because I do not expect anyone to come away as kind of professional master NLP people, but we're trying to steal and adapt some of this stuff. The second scenario might be discouraging ongoing negative peer pressure. This is something you're not witnessing live, but it's happening. You know it's happening constantly. Group of residents consistently pressuring one member to engage in activities that go against their own values and safety. So we want to empower the targeted resident to assert themselves confidently. NLP will talk about, you know, reframing through language patterns. Staff members can use language patterns to gently reframe the negative peer pressure into a less appealing option. You know, imagine saying something like, hey, these decisions are yours. You're 14 years of age now. I know you're a very positive person. You decide. Don't you agree? That's kind of what you're like. And I know you big enough, mature enough to make the right choice. And in this scenario, we're seeing something in the person they may not have seen themselves and encourage them to kind of relabel themselves. And then finally, what about how we can foster that positive peer pressure? Now, we've already discussed how powerful peer influence actually is. And when a group are clearly wrong, an individual is strongly inclined to go along with the group. Now, the staff aim is to encourage residents to positively influence each other and support shared goals. But what are the shared goals? Where do they come from? The management or the kids? And this is likely something that's ongoing. And as we said in the last episode, you know, a bond of togetherness in an institution and shared choices encourages positive group behavior and has a massive effect on accepted standards. And I'll just digress for a moment to say that that's how we manage the military. It's no accident that the sergeant is horrible and hated and evil, because it bonds the group together. Now, I'm not talking about staff becoming evil so the kids bond together, but I am talking about nurturing a togetherness, because it's very, very powerful. NLP will suggest we use kind of a Milton model hypnotic language pattern. Again, something else that doesn't come naturally to most of us, but it's easier once the foundation for a more positive environment is encouraged. So at this stage of our development, we might instead think about projecting our thoughts onto the others. You know, I'm sure you'll come to the right decision. You usually do. You're a strong personality, a leader in the group. And incorporating these language patterns into daily conversations, the staff member can promote a culture where residents motivate each other to achieve their goals and reinforce this kind of positive behavior. So please remember, there is a full set of notes with some hints and tips attached around here somewhere. You do not need to do any of that registering and email stuff for that. And that is peer pressure and NLP. Now, the effects of it are something we see every day in our work. And we often watch it live, whether it's positive or negative, but I hope that we can take away maybe some of the following. The power lies in the words and demeanor we use as workers. We are professionals who are on stage and trying to perform at our peak every single day. And thinking about the message we portray in every way. And as we say in NLP, you are always communicating. And I hope these kind of adapted, watered down NLP techniques can assist you in addressing peer pressure, whether mediating conflicts, discouraging negative influence, just fostering a positive peer environment with a residential youth work context. They don't always copy and paste directly, but by integrating these techniques into your actions, you can help young residents navigate peer pressure more effectively and make independent, informed choices. Thank you for being there. And remember that these commutable chunks of audio are simply forays into the world of NLP, a sampling of what can be done by professionals like you by stealing from the greatest change techniques ever created. And that's it for this week. Firstly, remember to get the free digital download that accompanies this episode. There's no logging in or signing up, and there's a link around here somewhere. If you're interested in delving into My World, a framework for residential youth workers that utilizes the very best change techniques ever created, then a good place to start is with my Big Four download. It's a 5-minute read that I hope will convince you that you are best placed to support your clients before, after, and during a crisis. After that, there's a free version of the team training where you could have a no-risk peek at my ideas in a little bit more detail. If you're enjoying the free audio course, NLP in Residential Youth Work, then you could whisper across the internet by clicking subscribe. That's it for me. I'm going to be back next week with another episode. A very happy and prosperous new year to you all, even though, as I say, it's November right now. My name's Michael Dawson, and this is the Action Factory, and I'll be back next week. Thank you so much for being there.